So, is everything all right back there, or can we have, if everyone can give a warm welcome to Christy Golden and Shelley Shapiro. You're all right, nothing.
We're a little wet. No, just water.
So, to start with, I think it would be... a great place to start about where, and I know you said you don't necessarily remember your first interaction with Aaron, but what's sort of the earliest memory? What was your first impression of Aaron?
How funny he was. Because I don't know, I just didn't expect that because he was so quiet. But my first, I guess my first working with him was when we were doing the New Jedi Order, and we brought him in to do a duology. And I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I hadn't worked with him before. At that point, to be honest, it was early on in my career in Star Wars, and I hadn't read his books before. I hadn't had time to catch up on all of them. And so I didn't know what to expect. And here's this guy full of ideas and expressing them with such humor and so nice. So it was just such a pleasure. It was just, well, working with all our authors has been a pleasure, but Aaron was one of the sweetest of them all. So for some reason, his sweetness always, that's what I always thought of. So every time he cracked some joke or something, it threw me.
Or a terrible pun.
Well, yeah.
So what about you, Christy? What was your first impression of working with Aaron? When did that relationship start?
Yeah, I got to meet Aaron when I was working on Fate of the Jedi. And I had the middle books. So I had the baton being handed to me and then handing it on. And Aaron was kicking the series off. And he was the one who came up with, I think, one of the cornerstone ideas, which is the whole basic concept that turned into Abeloth.
That was his idea. We were going back and forth
on emails.
I don't really remember that. You're yet? That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and so, you know, he was extremely intelligent. And when I met him, we were slightly naughty authors. We met before the official meeting and kind of bounced some ideas around so that when we did go into the official meeting the following morning, we kind of had some things we were all in agreement on.
Yeah, I was a little annoyed at you.
it was their idea. I was totally new about like, dudes, whatever you guys want to do. But he was so kind and so funny and, you know, as Shelley said, just so gentle that when he would say something that was just so sharp and incisive and, you know, cutting wit, absolutely brilliant. It was always a little startling because, you know, it's like mild-mannered Aaron Alston by day, but by night, you know, and he would just rule a room with his wit in a phenomenal and seemingly effortless way. And he was also very, very welcoming to me. And by that point, of course, he was a fixture in Star Wars and had, you know, quite a considerable following, justifiably so. And he never made me feel like I was an outsider or, you know, anything uncomfortable. He made me feel very, very welcome right from the start.
And I think it's important to point out that it wasn't just necessarily his wit, but, I mean, he was just brilliant. Like, you talk about the Fate of the Jedi series, and I remember him explaining to me once as sort of like a mythic epic, you know, like the Odyssey or something like that. And he's like, I just wanted to do that with Star Wars, with Luke. And then he would proceed to spend 40 minutes explaining all of the mythology behind it because he was such a nerd for particularly like Greek and Roman mythology.
But you know, one other thing that this reminds me of, though, is how he was really humble too, so he knew so much, but he never threw it at you, and never once. Here was Christy, brand new to Star Wars. There was Troy Denning was part of that, and he was sort of middle Star Wars, and then there was the old time, long time Star Wars guy, Aaron Alston, and he never ever once said, "Well, I know more about Star Wars than you do." I mean, He never approached it that way. He never said, well, check with me. I've been doing it for years, and what do you know? It was he was just like, we're all in this together, and we all know it, and we all love it, and let's just make something happen. And I just really appreciated that a lot.
And he really enjoyed it. He really, really enjoyed his work and had unfailing good cheer through all of these sometimes very long meetings on this long series. And he just had this excitement for it and enthusiasm and seemed to be excited to be working with you, working with me and Troy, and just very genuine.
During Fate of the Jedi, though, I remember he had his heart attack and was late on everything, and it was interesting to see how in good spirits he could still be, even in the face of all that, where, you know, he was behind on his deadlines but laughing about it because it seemed like he had a good excuse.
Well, first of all, let me just say, I loved Aaron, I loved working with Aaron, I loved how clean his manuscripts came in, they were great, they were always good, but he was always late. This time he had a really good excuse, and he did joke about that, but it scared the crap out of all of us when that happened. I mean, him and us, and just on a personal level, it's not like, yeah, we could get another author to finish a book, it's been done, but so far from what we wanted. So we bent over backwards to give him the time he needed to make it happen, to make the book happen with however he needed to do it, because that was it was his book and it was him, and that was extraordinarily important to us.
Christy, when you were working on Fate of the Jedi with Aaron, he had told me that you all sort of communicated by email to make sure you were all on the same page, and I'm wondering what sort of difference there might have been between email Aaron and in-person Aaron. I'm not sure there is one, but I'm just wondering like how he treated you in that creative aspect.
You know, I didn't see a difference. He was, you know, obviously a master of words. And his emails all sounded just like Aaron. You could just hear him in your head speaking. And he always, again, had almost, I hate to use the word chipper because that's kind of precious, but it was. He was just very upbeat and, you know, didn't dwell on what was going on with him. And just, again, through the whole time, you know, we were, as Shelley said, we were all very concerned about him, and we wanted, and by the way, that I remember hearing that the fans really stepped up to help him out, which I think is just wonderful. I'm sure that was very, very deeply appreciated. But yeah, he was just kind of who he was all the time.
And that, bringing up the fans, I mean, Aaron was definitely a fixture here at Celebration over years past, and other conventions like Dragon Con or sometimes San Diego Comic Con and things like that. And he told me that he just ate up the fan reaction that he had at conventions like this. And I'm wondering if either of you actually interacted with fans, with Aaron, and saw anything, you know, in particular that was, or even just a panel. I know at panels he could be, it's weird not having Aaron at a panel because I could just point to him and he'd produce a pun. if you guys could talk to that, to the fan experience with Aaron.
Well, one thing is how protective people were of him. There were always fans. Whenever he needed somebody, whenever he needed somebody to help him get somewhere, which reminds me of his sense of humor. You know, he always joked about his conditions. He had horrible health issues, and he always joked about it. And I'll never forget when he finally had his eye surgery, and he said how excited he was that he didn't have to bump into pillars anymore, or apologize to them when he did. But there was always somebody helping him, you know, helping him to you know, because he couldn't see that well, helping him move around, making sure he had somewhere to sit when he needed to rest. And I was so impressed, I mean, to see somebody get that much care taken of them by people who aren't actually family, you know, who just feel like family, who have become to feel like family to him. And I, seeing that sort of thing, when somebody can draw that kind of, it's always very... It says so much about a person. It's very impressive when somebody can draw that kind of love to him.
Well, and it's interesting too because he never actually, unless you directly talked to him about it, he never brought it up. You know, he wouldn't mention it. If he was walking through a convention hall and he needed to stop and rest, he would just stop and rest, let everybody keep going beyond him, and wait until they either noticed, hey, Aaron's lagged behind us, or, you know, maybe he needs help, or maybe his sugar's low, or something like that. But he would never mention a word about it at all, and didn't really let any of his visual impairment before his eye surgery get in his way. I remember
he mentioned it occasionally when he just wanted to explain. So he would say, because we weren't as close as some of his entourage, say, and he always said it like a little joke, but just wanted to let me know that we have to go slowly because he can't see too well, or he had to stop and use his glasses a certain way, or he'd apologize for typos in his emails. But it was never complaining, ever, never.
With Aaron, I'm wondering, after you'd worked with him those initial times, and you got to know him through his work, I'm wondering if there's a piece of his, both of you, like where you're working with him directly, following his stories, and you're kind of going through everything after a certain point. What was sort of like what made a story Aaron's to you?
For me, when I was reading the manuscripts as they came to me, was just so much of, there was a lot of joy in his writing. And there was a lot of humor, and it wasn't the slapstick humor, it's the best kind of humor, which comes from characters. And it was just so fun to read his stuff, and the action was exciting, and the characters were real, and there just was this joie de vivre about it. He just seemed to be really having a good time when he was writing.
Well, I particularly love the richness of the characters. It just, they always felt like they were all, they connected, the way they connected to each other and came across as themselves was, I can't explain why. I was always slightly surprised and always very pleased every time I got one of his manuscripts. I should never have been surprised, but it was just always such a pleasure it was such an immersive experience. The only other thing I can say is he did have a tendency to occasionally put things in that he hadn't gotten permission for. And we did have to ask him occasionally to dial back on something or to change something because he, hadn't been approved by Lucasfilm. But that was one of the things. He got so into the story that he just let it happen the way he saw it unfolding. But then he didn't say, no, I won't take it out, I want it this way. He never did. He was always like, oh yeah, okay. And he fixed it and changed it, and it was perfect.
That's funny that you should mention that, because of how fast we wanted to get the books out to people so that it was on a regular basis and people always had something new and exciting to read, and because of his health issues, he would, in the very last draft, have some brilliant idea that Shelley would see, and I wouldn't. And people would say, well, what about this? And I think it was the coup, that elite group that was planning, was pulling the strings behind the politics angle, the strings behind it. That was something that I didn't see. And people were like, well, why don't you follow up on that? And I'm like, but it was so brilliant, and I was able to run with it with the next ones. And in Ascension, I got to wrap up that thread, and it was so fun because he had laid the groundwork of these wonderful, idiosyncratic, you liked them, but you hated them at the same time. And it was so intelligently written, these machinations that were going on behind the screen. So that was a lot of fun to pick up on that.
So I want to ask about, obviously, a lot of people in here, myself included, are wearing these incredibly loud and gaudy Hawaiian t-shirts. Aaron wore shirts of this nature almost exclusively, and the louder and more obnoxious, the better. And I'm wondering how he was able to slip himself into the Legacy of the Force books. As that doctor with the shirt, and I swear this is something Aaron just wanted for himself, but that shirt that just changed to horrible patterns all over the place. Was that something you were like, when you got that, you're like, Aaron, you put yourself in this book and he needed to get Lucasfilm approval, or no, you just let him go?
It worked. Why mess with it?
I guess that's something interesting about Aaron. He was just, for as subdued as he was, his shirt choices were about as loud as possible. So we have the capability of taking some questions from the audience as well. And I'm wondering if anyone is interested. We've got people with microphones roaming around somewhere. Not that I can see anything beyond the screen in front of me.
And feel free not just to ask questions, but to share your own stories and experiences with everybody else that you had with or about Aaron.
While you're getting that mic there, go ahead.
Stand up and your name and where you're from.
Dylan, I'm from about 30 minutes down south of here. I just had a question for YouTube as the editors. We all know that, you know, he had a great sense of humor. When you were going through and editing his drafts and jokes, did you ever have to cut, you know, jokes that weren't appropriate or like you're trying to go?
No, because he was an absolute professional. And while he would make those jokes, you know, in a meeting with us, which is fine because we're all bad that way, whatever, but he did not put that into the manuscripts because he knew it didn't belong in Star Wars. And there was never, everything he wrote was absolutely, he gets such a sense of Star Wars, I don't think it would even occur to, well, maybe he did and he took it out before I saw it, but I've never, nothing ever showed up in a manuscript like that that I recall having to take out because it wasn't appropriate.
And I actually, when Aaron passed away, I was editing a collection of short stories, and I was actually, like, the morning he passed away, I was emailing him, hassling him about a deadline he'd missed. And I got the story months later. We ended up holding production of the book because they found his story, and they ended up asking me to finish it, but he had laid out in outline form, like, all of the jokes. Like, so I had 3/4 of his story or half of his story and then just an outline setting up all of the jokes. And it was the most daunting thing I've ever done, but it was like, well, I don't need to actually reinvent the wheel here because he's just done all the work for me. So, yeah. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that? Okay.
I just think that's marvelous. He's laid out the jokes. Other people lay out the big crisis points.
He had those too, but there was much more detail on how to set the jokes up.
That's Aaron, right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
My name's Damien. I'm from Sacramento. And I just want to share with you a couple quick remembrances I have. When I was young, I moved to a town where the education system was... It killed my love of writing, reading. And for about 9 years, I read maybe 10 books throughout my entire school life. I know. My dad handed me a Timothy Zahn book when I was 19 and in junior college, and still finding ways not to read. And Timothy Zahn kicked the door back open to me for reading, but Aaron Alston, he set the table. It was his books, not the Thrawn trilogy, that grew my love of Star Wars far beyond the movies. It was his humor. I got a friend of mine recently, about a year ago, into playing the X-Wing miniatures game, which is just a blast. And it's fun to find Tycho in there. I always insist on playing Tycho, and my friend would just blow him out of the sky because he's in a tiny little A-Wing. And he asked me one day, he's like, why are you so faithful to this? It doesn't work for you. And I said, well, to be fair, none of it works for me. It's just fun. But I gave him some Star Wars books. And I had to start him with Stackpole's 4, because that sets the table for Aaron's next 6.
Stackpole would have loved that.
Yeah. But and they're both great in very different ways. It was Alston's books that opened my friend up to loving the characters as much as I did, and now I've made a convert of him. He's constantly, I have an entire bookshelf, by the way, a guy who only read 9 books. I have an entire bookshelf just of Star Wars. I have a master's degree in history now. It was Star Wars books that did that, and it was Aaron Alston's books that kept me.
In my experience, I'm not sure how much experience you guys had with Aaron roaming conventions with him, or anywhere else, but every time here, like, we couldn't go 10 feet without someone telling a story like that, and it perked up his day, or 10 minutes between, you know, the next person saying something like that, because it tickled him to death.
Your name and where you're from?
Caleb Friesen from Vancouver, Canada. I have kind of a story of Aaron. I was late for Christy Golden's panel at C7, and so I was the last guy standing out the door. I couldn't get in, and Aaron came walking up, and I had a book I'm working on with my buddy, and I was having a hard time developing some of the characters' personalities in my novel, and he sat down with me for like an hour, and while Christy did her panel, and just helped me flesh out how to do my characters and how to lay out their personalities and the face of these characters, and kind of gave me his own little private panel outside, and it was something really memorable, and it helped me solidify where I was going to take my book. And. And not only that, I added like 6 more characters to my book because of that conversation. But yeah, and he helped me to understand where to find the humor with these characters and when to use it and why. And yeah, he did a really good job of just putting me in the right direction as a writer. And I was a completely inexperienced writer, still am, but... without that, those conversations, the few meetings that I did have with him, and he always took the time to talk to me and never be like, oh, this guy again, you know? So he's a super, super cool guy, and I'll always remember that. Thank you.
I remember you sending me an email about that story, and I'm so glad that you're here so that you can share that with everyone else. Thank you.
To be honest, that's how I... got to know Aaron a little bit too. I met him at a Dragon Con. Like, I was covering the convention as press and did an interview with him and had mentioned that I was interested in really getting into writing, and that was the same thing. Like, he just took it and never told me to go away. And, you know, got into... I was telling the story backstage, like, he would show me and teach me things, like, all the time. He was really passionate about teaching people. I mean, he'd go to conventions all over the place and teach people about writing, and even in a one-on-one setting, he would be doing the same thing because he was really passionate about it. And he would say it's because he was being really selfish, that he just wanted the next generation of writers to write stuff he was going to like. And I think that's very, very true. Do you guys mind if I tell a quick story while we've got these awful shirts on the screen? So. Tim Zahn is about the most subdued guy in the world. Like, more subdued than Aaron. He's just like, I'm going to wear black all the time, no matter what. At Origins Game Fair, which is another convention that Aaron was like a huge fixture at, we did the Hawaiian shirt day after Aaron passed away. And Tim showed up in a bright blue Hawaiian shirt. Because that's how much he cared about, you know, Aaron and honoring him and stuff. But every time any fan would come up to... ask Tim for a picture, he would very neatly take the Hawaiian shirt off, fold it, place it on the table, come around so he could take his picture in the black shirt.
And
so
I have one, and I was going to bring it, but I was sick when I left, and I was not thinking straight, and I forgot to pack it.
It's in the back. You just didn't want to be photographed. Like, no.
I would. It totally doesn't fit and looks ridiculous, and I'd be happy to be photographed in it.
Yeah. Tim, not as much. So, next comment.
Yeah. Name's Abraham. I'm from Fresno. And I just wanted to share something real quick. I was able to attend San Diego Comic-Con back in 2009 when Fate of the Jedi was barely being released as far as in the story behind that, and I made that panel. When I found out he was going to be there, Aaron, I completely flipped. And my buddy who I always go with, he said, "Are you all right?" I go, "Aaron also gonna be there. He's gonna be there. He's gonna be there." And I go, "What are you talking about?" I go, "He's gonna be there. He's gonna be there." And then, so we kind of had a plan before that happened. I go, "You know what? You do whatever you want to do. I'm gonna make sure I'm gonna wait in line, just sit at this panel for that one day." So, and then of course I was able to get his autograph, dumped up, you know, my books that I'd written, he wrote. That's how excited I'm at right now. He was able to autograph some of them. I got a picture with him. So to me, that was like my highlight there. I feel really bad. I didn't bring my Hawaiian shirt. I'm sorry. But, you know, that's my memory of Aaron, was that, you know, I was able to at least get a picture with him and meet him and have a little chat with him, you know, when I was getting his autographs. Now I know there's some discussion, probably some people in this room, about the EU and, of course, the new canon that's happening now with Force Awakens. I'm not going to really get into that, even though I kind of want to, sorry. my thing with Aaron, especially with his writing, was that he created a wealth of new characters, but he also developed those secondary, third or fourth characters, such as, you know, Vegetilis, Tycho, Wes, Hobby, you know, he really created an essence of those characters that really came out in the novel, especially in Starfighters of Adamar. I guess my question to you would be that, even though with this new canon that's happening, is there going to be any way that maybe they're going to be, those characters will be fleshed out again in that sense, or reintroduced, or maybe somehow? I mean, I would hate to think that was sacrilege, because I think those are Aaron's characters, even though Lucas kind of created them first. But it's just, I want to know, are there going to be something like that happening with those secondary characters, even though most of the people that know Star Wars only know of Han, Luke, and Leia, but, you know, these other characters are, to me, just as important because of Aaron.
We have gotten this question in a variety of forms all weekend. And I understand why. And as I just keep telling people, at the moment, everything is new, but everything isn't new. We're moving in a new direction, but all that stuff is still there to mine if we need it or if we want it. And what the story group keeps saying is, you know, we're looking for stories that want to be told. And the same thing goes for parts of what has been done before. If a story arises that we're going to tell that has a use for or a need for a character or a situation or a world or whatever that was developed in an older book by any of the authors, by Aaron, we will certainly use that character or place. There is no law that says you have to invent something new. What we won't do is do it for its sake and its sake alone. In other words, we're not going to say, well, we should tell a Huggy story because we should. But if there's a story for him, yeah, there's no reason we won't. We just won't contradict any new... any official continuity, but we always tried not to do that anyway. So the answer is maybe, but not definitely. It's not off the table, and if it makes sense, it'll happen. And I think that if anybody comes up with, I'm thinking about an author now, if any, not a particular one, if an author comes up with the idea to use one of Aaron's characters, or we do, and give it to the author, then this author is going to be, and we will be, very, very true as we can to anything Aaron developed and to the spirit of his creations in moving forward in a way that Aaron would be proud of. That would be my goal.
Can I say, too, Aaron commented about the switchover, and he was quite pleased with it, because then he could say, without boasting, introduce himself as the legendary Aaron Austin. And for a man that humble, that was important to him. So we have another question.
He said that at a panel. I just stole his joke. That's real. He said that.
I've been someone that's read most of the books, is probably the case here, just in terms of Star Wars EU, and I considered myself an apologist when people would say, why would you like that, or that's terrible, or it's not the movies. I guess the true thing is, I never had to apologize for any of Aaron's books in that. They stood on their own. And some of the series, I wasn't a big fan of Stackpole's version, but I loved it once Aaron took over X-Wing. And New Jedi Order, but his books were good in that series. So I guess that's the thing. He could stand out, even though he was still a part of the mythos of Star Wars, but his was unique, and I guess that's what I'll miss, but I can reread him if I want.
Did you guys have anything you wanted to comment about that? Hmm? Did you guys have any comment you wanted to make on that?
I said it pretty well, I think. I wish people would remember that they can reread and reread. You know, people, the wonderful thing about being an actor or an artist or an author is that you don't just, I mean, ordinary people live on in the minds and memories of the people who love them and who knew them. But an author has that little extra thing. They live on and on and on. As long as people keep reading their books, they live forever.
Hi, I'm Martha. I'm from Austin, Texas. And I didn't know who Aaron Austin was. I met him at the airport in Austin. I was going to Celebration, and he came up, and I had a Yoda puppet and all kinds of junk with me. I looked like an idiot. And he came up in his shirt, and he was a little disheveled, and he sat down. He had a little trouble finding where he should be, and so I kind of assisted. I could tell he was visually impaired, and we chatted about, he was worrying about roommates taking care of the house, and I think he had some pets. I could be wrong, I think he had cats. And we were talking about his cats, and I have cats, and we just chatted. I had no idea who he was, and we were just talking. I didn't even really think I talked about Star Wars, we just talked about our cats. And he was just the sweetest guy, just a really, just a nice guy. I said, well, you need a, you know, I've got a rental car or something, you need a ride over to the thing. He's like, no, that's okay. Never mentioning that he had, like, I think a car waiting for him or something. But he was just a sweet, sweet man. And I was very sorry to hear that he had passed away. And I honestly didn't realize how bad his health problems were. You know, I knew about the visual impairment, you know, when you meet him. But he was a really sweet man and a very kind, calm man, and it's a real loss.
I agree. It's odd though how secretly vengeful he could be. When I got my advanced review copy of Mercy Kill, I'm looking at the book and I emailed him after I read the opening where there's basically the Temple of Doom dance number with Piggy and Billy Scott. And I emailed him and I said, did you really do this? Because I really enjoyed it. And he's like, oh, nuts, I messed up. Because I was supposed, like, you were supposed to beg me for mind bleach afterwards. And anything short of that, I failed my job. But that book was so touching, too, so it starts off in the most ridiculous way, and he could still bring it back together as something that's so touching. I think it speaks to the complexity of him.
I love that book. I came to love all the characters in it, and we're dealing with his, you know, as somebody else said earlier, you know, they're secondary characters to the Star Wars galaxy, but they support a whole book beautifully.
So we've got another comment.
Montine from Seattle, and spoiler alert, if you haven't read Iron Fist or Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, but at C4 I got to meet Aaron because I really wanted to tell him that when Tom Fannin died, I cried like a baby, and I did not cry when they killed Dumbledore. And when I told him that, like, the look on his face was just like, whoa, wow. And I just remember, like, being at work reading it and just, like, sobbing, and I had a customer come in, and I had to play, like, I'm just reading this book. But yeah, it's great that I was just so in tune with his characters and just loved them so much. So.
Yeah, Aaron's writing was the whole package. I mean, we've talked a lot about his humor and his wit, But there was no part of writing a book that he was not a master of. He could bring you to tears and make you laugh and make you gasp with the action. And as some, in fact, I have a panel based on all the things that I hate to do when I am writing. So as somebody who is not always comfortable doing everything every time, I really admired that about him. And to be so, self-deprecating and so genuine, he was really a remarkable person with a great deal of talent and so much skill.
Well, and he knew all the moving parts of the story and was able to adapt what he was doing. I remember him telling me that Tom Fanning wasn't supposed to die in that third book. He was supposed to die much sooner. And as he was getting through it, he was just like, no, this is not the appropriate time because it's not going to have the right impact. And he actually, he was a brilliant architect just of stories and was willing to fix things and restructure them when he knew they were wrong. Next question. I can't see anything out there. I'm sorry.
That's okay. My name is Lisa Stevens. I work in the adventure game industry, and I actually knew Aaron back before he ever got into Star Wars. We used to hang out at Gen Con with Mike Stackpole and talk about games. And I remember one specific Gen Con where Aaron came up to me and said, I knew that Mike had started writing the X-Wing Rogue Squadron stuff, and Aaron's like, Mike's convinced the people at Del Rey that I can write books, that I can write Star Wars books, and I think he's crazy. I've never written a book before, really. I mean, he had done some stuff, and I said, Aaron, you've written RPGs, you've written role-playing games, you know how to tell a story, you know how to make characters. I mean, this is what we do. We just don't do it in that format. I'm sure it'll be great. And sure enough, he said, well, you know. He looked at me and said, well, I guess Stackpole's doing it. I can do that, too.
I got to tell you, that was... He told me one of the... So I found out, like, I'd known Aaron for years at this point and found out that he'd written most of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. And I had no idea. And I went down and I tracked down this book that he had written called The Game Master Design Kit. And it's this amazing book about, like, how to tell a story-driven RPG. And it's amazing. And I brought it to a convention I knew we were both guests at. And I asked him to sign it for me, and he was really sheepish about it because he didn't like being known as the guy who used to do games. And he said that one of the proudest moments he'd ever, like, experienced in his life is when he got introduced as not game designer and writer Aaron Alston, but as author, you know, writer Aaron Alston. And I'll never forget how sheepish he was about all of the great work he did in role-playing games. And I'm glad he did all that stuff because I eat it up. I love it. He was as good at that as he was writing novels.
I'd like to tell a brief story about Aaron. I was at a social event with him and Mike Stackpole and Timothy Zahn, and a fan comes up and he says, my three favorite Star Wars authors in one place. This is awesome. Can you tell me what's the secret to being a great Star Wars author? And Aaron looks at Mike, and Mike is thoughtfully stroking his goatee. And Aaron looks at Tim, and Tim is thoughtfully stroking his goatee. So Aaron thoughtfully strokes his goatee, and he says, evidence would suggest the first step is you need to grow a goatee.
Yeah, that's a very Aaron response.
So, hi, I'm Jason. I'm from San Jose. I mentioned earlier that I started reading Star Wars books in fourth grade with Air. And 15 years ago, I was a sophomore in college, and I took this sci-fi seminar class. And I had never read any other sci-fi other than Star Wars. And I actually hadn't read a lot of books other than Star Wars at that point, because there was enough of them at that point that I just kept reading. And so every 2 weeks, a group of people would bring in a book, and then we had to read it, and they would share them. And people brought in Philip K. Dick, and they brought in, you know, Frank Herbert and Heinlein and all these greats. And so mine was towards the end of the semester, and Adamar had been out for like 6 months or something. Starfire had been out. So I brought that in, and I thought they were going to hate me. And I come in, and the book's got X-Wings on the cover, and I like had a Star Wars shirt on. And I brought it in and shared it with them. And a bunch of these really snobby guys that I hated because they kept looking down at me because I had read these books read it and loved it. And I felt so in finally, and I didn't tell them that I was still reading all the books they had recommended because I was still intimidated. But they loved Starfighters, and I think it was the moment that I realized that it was okay to be as obsessed with the books I was, because it didn't mean you were just a fanboy, it meant that you actually enjoyed good literature. And so Aaron stood up to these really snobby guys in my college, and it made me seem really cool because they hadn't read any of his stuff before. So that made me really cool when I was like 19.
Yeah, Aaron was a scholar of all sorts of literature, and some of the worst literature, and I don't know if anybody knows this, but he was also an expert in all of the worst movies you've never seen.
Yeah.
Oh man, he showed me some terrible movies. But he would take all of it, like, he was the biggest fan of, like, Cinematic Titanic and Mystery Science Theater. When we get together for writing groups, we had our little writing group. Like, we'd do all of our critiquing, and then we'd get together, and Aaron would curate Mystery Science Theater 3000 episodes, and he would just guffaw loudly through them all night. And for some reason, him and I were always roommates, and then we'd talk about how bad the movies were up, like, until the sun came up, and I'm like, Aaron, how do you still have energy to talk about anything? Like, you look like you were ready to just, like, nod off 10 minutes ago. And he's like, oh.
All right, so back in 2006, around June, he was doing book signings for Betrayal. And me and some friends were out in St. Louis while he was doing that. We'd also done a large Star Wars get-together of the FanForce group from the area. Well, I decided to ask my wife to marry me at the book signing. So we worked it out, several of us. A couple of them had already met with Aaron and stuff like that. So he's signing books. We get my book. Some stormtroopers grab my wife and bring her over to him. And she's still doing the whole Star Wars thing at this point. So she's freaking out. She's like, did I do something wrong? You know, I'm in a really poorly done Han Solo costume. I'm calling myself Steve Solo, cousin of Han Solo, because it's that bad. And she's clasping this book to her chest as hard as she can. And I'm like, honey, you need to hand it to him so he can sign it. So, you know, he's already in on it. He knows what's going on. So he signs it, hands it to her. She clutches it back to her chest, doesn't even read it. So I'm like, I'm sitting here going, okay, honey, why don't you read what he wrote? And she opens it up, and I get on one knee. And what it said, and I've still got the picture here, it's just real simple. It's just, to Lisa, congratulations, ask Mike, and may the force be with you, Aaron Alston. And so as she looks up, or she reads this, and I can see her face changes. She looks down, and she looks over the book and realizes I'm on one knee. And she just utters, oh my God. Which I'm like, at that point, I'm like, okay, oh my God, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And we've now been married for going on 6 years.
I wonder if Aaron had something witty to say about that.
When it comes to signed books, I must say that my copy of Adamar is actually like the most prized possession that I have of all Star Wars things, because it's actually my second signed copy. The first one was stolen, and I went to my first Star Wars convention in Germany in 2004, and he was there, and I got Adamar signed. I was so happy about it. Then I left it at a place where I was working and someone stole it, and I was really heartbroken. Then at Celebration 3, I had it with me, and for some reason I just met Aaron in the hallway and I told him the story about, yeah, I used to have a signed book, and I said, oh, but you should come over. And I went to the booth and there was no line, so I just went up and, yeah, you were the one with that story. So then he actually scribbled over the whole inside of my new copy of Adamar, thieves, don't steal this book. The old
now, does someone else have a mic? I can't.
Yeah, we can't see a thing from up here.
Yeah.
I can tell more anecdotes.
I'm Olivia from Kansas, and A while ago, I went to my first convention, and it was Star Wars Celebration, and it was a big thing for me, because I had, I'd always watched the movies, but I had never really known there were books, except for my neighbors, who kind of just told me about them. And I was in, I'm into writing, I like writing, and his panel, I only went one day, so his panel's like, was one of the only things I saw. It was, he just made me feel so included, like I didn't really interact with him alone, but his panel made me feel so included. I was 13, you know, it was scary for me. I was like, oh, is it gonna like my costume? How am I gonna look? And I just felt so included. It's one of the things I really remember. He was so nice. I didn't find out that he had passed until right before this convention. It was so great.
I just wanted, I'm Lori from Iowa City, actually. Aaron Alston's books, so our whole family's been big science fiction fans, always my mother, my uncle, myself, and then I brought my son up on the X-Wing series, Aaron Alston, and I think we met him at multiple conventions, and he was always like your favorite cousin, you know, like you were, and he
the weird
sort of,
one.
I have a lot of those, actually. And so he would have, you know, he kind of, I think that's what everybody's kind of talking about, that you, he made you feel like you were special, even in just a couple of seconds. And that was what was really so nice about him. I felt like he kind of watched my son grow up, and my son grew up on his books.
I think that's the thing, Aaron saw way more than you ever thought he did, especially, I mean, it's just natural to have underestimated him, and he would always prove how you shouldn't ever do that with him, because he saw everything. He had an encyclopedic brain of everything, and you know, even on stuff like Facebook or Twitter, he wouldn't comment on anything, he wouldn't like anything, but you'd catch up to him, and he would have all of the intimate details of my day and ask me how my kids were doing. And I remember one time I'd mentioned my kids wanted to see some zombie movies, but I couldn't find any that were age appropriate. He didn't comment on anything. I saw him like 3 months later, and he had a list for me of zombie movies I could show my kids. And he was just the neatest guy.
I have a story about Aaron Alston at Dragon Con. I'm Nancy from Orlando. So Dragon Con 2012 was the weekend after Celebration. So there was Aaron and a few other authors and that made their way from Orlando up to Atlanta, and Aaron was one of them. And he was a big rock star that weekend because Mercy Gill had just come out, and he was really excited about it. So at Dragon Con, the very last day, which if you've ever been, you know everyone is already leaving. He had a Mercy Kill panel at 2:30. And he comes in, he sits down, he says, "Hi, I'm Aaron Alston. What are your questions?" So we just spent the next half an hour with someone going around the room with the microphone because he couldn't see. And we just asked him all these questions about Mercy Kill and like really ridiculous questions like, "Can you please tell us the history of Jesmyn Tanner? We need to know how she came about." And he talked to us about everything, and it was the best panel because it was just him being Aaron. It was one of my best memories of that con.
I loved Aaron on panels. I loved panels where they were they used to do their trademarked Tim, Mike, and Aaron show, and the three of them just yucking it up was probably some of the most entertaining convention fair I've ever seen in my entire life.
Hi, I'm Kyle from Texas, and I've grown up on Star Wars books for as long as I can remember, and one of my favorite moments is one day I go to my sister sitting right here, and I say, "You have to read this book," and it's the first X-Men book, Stockpole. And she's like, "Well, I don't know." And then I convince her, and she reads it. She gets a couple books in. She's like, "Wow, these are really good, you know." But I could tell she wasn't hooked. I'm like, "Okay, here's book 4, Rey Squadron. Or book 5. And I give it to her, and she comes back, and she's like, I have never laughed so damn hard in fucking my life. She's been hooked ever since, and now she's almost as big a Star Wars fan as I am. And she just loves anything with Alston on it. She's like, have you read it? Have you read it? Did you get it? Did you get it? It's 12:15 a.m. Why don't you have it yet?
I think one of the things that's important to mention is how hard it is to be funny. Its humor is very, very difficult to do well, and I have read plenty of books, especially in science fiction and fantasy. It seems harder even than in ordinary novels. And he just was consistently, the humor never felt forced. It was effortless, it was natural, and it was really funny. And that's an amazing talent.
It all came really naturally from the characters. He never tried to go for the punchline, which he would personally, but not necessarily in the books. The characters would be in those situations and have just the right thing to say. And it was great. I loved it. I don't know. How did it feel just like being able to read one of his books for the first time, knowing like really no one else had, and seeing all those in there?
It's always fun. Look, I'm used to that, right? This is what I do. But I always look forward to these books. I always look forward to Aaron's. I particularly look forward to Mercy Kill. I'm very fond of that book. And it doesn't matter that I'm reading it before anybody else or whatever. Then one nice thing is I have a few authors. Actually, right now I'm blessed with quite a number who, like Aaron, give me something that I know is going to be really good out of the gate. Other people like that. But with Aaron, you know, you always knew you're going to get something clean, so I could just enjoy it. I didn't have to feel like I was working. And that's the one thing that I really appreciate, as I said, with some other authors. It can feel like it's just fun from the start, as opposed to sometimes you have to do a little work in the middle and then make it fun.
Hi, my name is Helen. I'm from New York City. I'm also the author of the new Essential Guide to Alien Species. I have another Dragon Con story. Dragon Con 2006 happened approximately 2 months before Alien Species came out. So I went to the authors panel, and I'm sitting pretty much where I am now in the front row in front of the panel. And Mike Stackpole and Aaron, are already sitting up there. The two of them see me come around the dais, grab me by the arm, and make me sit between them. My book wasn't out for another 2 months, and it's also one of the essential guides, so no one knew who I was. And as we went along the panel, Mike introduced himself and then hands me the microphone and says, here, it's your turn. And I said who I was, I said the title of the book, and the entire room went, oh! And it's probably my favorite moment of that book coming out. The other thing I wanted to share was, I don't remember the context, but I once had a conversation in which I asked Aaron if he'd ever shave the goatee. And his response to me was, no, because my face looks like a potato.
And he would have said that so matter-of-fact. So we've got time for just another quick question or two, but...
I have to share this because it's one of my favorite Aaron stories. And it's not really about Aaron. It was back in the dark days of Bantam and all the maybe less than perfect books or, you know, not our favorite authors or anything. And I was at a gathering and Mike Stackpole came in and he's like, okay, you know, I just want to let you guys know I'm not writing any more X-Men novels. And the whole room just went, what? No, you can't do this to us. No, oh God, what's going to happen now? And he's like, it's okay. My friend Aaron Alston's going to write it. It's going to be okay. And that is like the one time that Mike Stackpole was not right, because it wasn't okay. It was absolutely brilliant and perfect. And I looked at that moment as when Aaron really kind of came into my life to begin with. And I miss him terribly, and his influence and his gifts, from taking care of his friends to taking care of fans. You know, I've walked with him in the halls. He never stopped talking to fans. He never hesitated. He never, even if it was bad for him, and you're like, got to go, my friend, he would always make time for anyone who wanted to talk. And he was just a gift, and I'm glad to see this many people here sharing that feeling.
No, I think it's a really special thing that we're here celebrating Star Wars, and I think what better way to celebrate Star Wars than to celebrate Aaron, because he made himself so entrenched as a fixture of it, as a fixture of the community, as a fixture of the property, and I don't think anybody did it as well as he did, and I think we're about out of time, so I'm wondering if you two have any final remarks about Aaron, and thank you so much for being here to do this. I really enjoyed this more than I thought I might, because I thought it was going to be all just tears.
Well, the wonderful thing about somebody who has so touched so many lives so well is it's so easy to do it without tears, because there's so many good memories. And I think that one thing that Aaron is, you could definitely hold him up as an example to aspiring authors on how to be an author. I mean, except maybe make your deadlines a little bit more. But really, how to be. I mean, you can't tell people how to be creative, but how to be professional and how to be warm and how to always welcome fandom. Because without your fans, you really are nothing. You're just some printed words that nobody cares about. And he embraced his fans, and they embraced him back. You embraced him back. And I think he's a very, very good role model for anybody who wants to write and to have fans someday.
Now I'm starting to get a little teary-eyed. That was beautiful, Shelley. Just looking around, how many people here, and then I heard that at Dragon Con something similar was also done. And I have always felt that books, the characters in books, don't live until they are read. And anytime any of you reads anything by Aaron, not only is his memory in your mind and heart, but you get to help make his characters live every time you read them. And I know that that would make him happy.
And if you're not laughing while you're doing it, he will come back to haunt you and tell you you're doing it wrong. So thank you very much for coming, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your celebration and keep Aaron in your thoughts, because he deserves a place there.
I'm Tom from Delray. I work with Shelley and Christy. We actually do, down at our booth, booth 1211, it's right near Ray's Speeder and the Millennium Falcon. We have some copies of Mercy Kill for free for all of you at the booth. If you go down and say you're at the panel, I know many of you probably have it. It's probably dog-eared, probably a hardcover, softcover, you've got ebooks, whatever. But go down and take a copy, share it with someone new. And thanks for coming.
Club Jade picture before you guys go. Club Jade picture. Are you going to... Scotty, let's take a picture.
Brian. Hi. Brian. Hi.